So by faith, Noah, being warned by God concerning events as yet unseen, in reverent fear, constructed an ark for the saving of his household. By this he condemned the world, and he became an heir of the righteousness that comes by faith. When we lived in Abingdon, once a year, it was the highlight of the town, there was, I believe it's the longest street fair in the country. Ox Street was filled with massive, great big rides, huge things that flung you around, flung you up into space and down again and round and shook you up, and they looked hideous things. But people flocked to them and paid huge amounts of money to go on these rides. And I looked and I shook my head. There's no way I'm going on those. But maybe if you were an owner of a ride and you wanted to persuade me, come on my ride. You might come and you could show me your insurance certificate, maybe. Maybe you could show me your liability insurance. You could say, look, it's okay, I'm covered if you fall off. Well, that's not going to do it, is it? You say, well, look, you can look at my my engineering certificate. This is how it works, okay? And you could show me the technical details, and I'm still not getting it. And you say, okay, this is the only thing that that might possibly clinch it. You say, well, come. Come with me and just look. Look at people. Stand and watch and look at the faces of these people queuing up. What are they? They're smiling. They're having a lot of fun. Look at them as they get on the ride. They're still having a great time, and they're screaming, but I think it's fun, okay? And they're shaking around now, but look at them as they come off. They're smiling. And look, they're going back to do it again. Look at them. They're an example to show you that my ride is okay. Well, you know, God, here in Hebrews, he's shown us what faith is. And he's shown us that it's completely reasonable. He's shown us that Jesus is better than anything else you could have. And he's tried to persuade the readers of his book that they can't go back to their old ways of Judaism. If you've got Jesus, you've got everything you need. And now to really, really persuade these readers and to persuade us, he says, look, I'm going to take you by the hand now. And I'm going to show people, if you like, on the ride of faith. I'm going to take you down the corridor of history, and I'm going to introduce you to people who had faith. And just look at them. Look at what their faith is like in their lives. Is it like your faith? God says. Do you have what they had? And for each person, there's different things that he wants to show us. And this morning, he wants to take us by the hand and lead us back to the beginning, to Noah. And boy, have we got some things to learn about Noah. Almost every word here is packed full of meaning. God wants to teach us about faith through Noah. And there's four things that we can learn, I believe, about faith from Noah this morning. First of all, faith believes God. Faith believes God. We kind of left last time. Trevor was looking at Enoch with us. And we read in verse 6 that without faith it is impossible to please him. It's impossible to please God without faith. It's impossible to walk with God without faith. And what did we read back in Genesis chapter 6, verse 9, we read that Noah walked with God. If we're on a really boring walk, okay, that's what the children sometimes think when we're out for a walk, and they're tired and they're miserable and they're grumbling. Can you believe that? Okay, and if I want to cheer them up, there's one thing I found always works. I say, look, let's skip together. And it always works. Okay, if you skip, you've got to smile. Okay, don't try it now. Try it after. But you can't not but smile when you're skipping with someone. It works. Okay. Okay, the writer here says, look, you can't walk with God. It's impossible to walk with God without faith. You can't do it. You can't. You try it. You can't. You can't. Okay. You see, when you walk together, you're doing it together, aren't you? You know that person's there, and you're finding out about them as you walk together. If they're a greater person than you, you follow them. You're going in their direction. You keep in step with them. And as you walk with a friend, you share your life with them, don't you? Your life stories, what's going on in your life. You talk about them and you find out what their plans are, what your character is like. You share in intimacy and fellowship as you walk day in, day out with someone. And Noah did that with his God. And by faith, we can walk with God day in, day out with God, sharing in intimacy and fellowship with the living God through faith. And I guess one day, as Noah was walking with his God, God shared with him some awful news. I mean, Noah knew God's character as they'd walked together for so long. He knew that he was a holy, powerful God. He looked at that cherubim with a flaming sword guarding the Garden of Eden. Oh, God was a holy, just God who couldn't tolerate sin. And then one day, God gave that terrible warning about the future. Years ago, I used to go and help at a primary school run a Bible club. We called it Ichthus Club. And I helped this other teacher run it, and it was great fun. One lesson, we were talking about creation, and the children all made these lovely sculptures of what they thought the Garden of Eden looked like, and they had these lovely, they spent ages creating these plasticine animals and trees, and it was really lovely. And then a week later, we put those to one side, a week later we had another club, and we got the plasticine models out, and they reminded themselves of what craftsmen they'd been and how wonderful they were. And then my friend James got his thumb and he started squashing the models in front of them. And there were gasps of horror. "Sir, no, sir, don't do that." And I, when I saw the response, I joined in as well. It was great fun squashing these models that they'd created, and there was yelps and screams. And then we paused. "You know, that is what God feels like," we said. "When he made this world so wonderfully, he created it." And as Noah looked around, as he walked with his God, and he saw the mess that sin had made. Did you hear those words in chapter 6? "The Lord saw that the wickedness of man was great on the earth, that every intention of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually." What a mess. What a distorted mess had been created in this world. And as the children felt the pain of their models destroyed, think how God feels as he looks down on this earth. How hurt he is. And then one day, Noah can understand. As God warns him, we read there in Hebrews, he warns him of something unseen, something in the future. God says, "I'm going to come and I'm going to blot out life from this earth. I'm going to wipe mankind and every living thing off this earth. It's going to be cataclysmic, Noah. It's going to be beyond your imagination. But I'm telling you, Noah, I'm warning you, the God who you trust, I'm telling you it's going to happen." Do you remember in Narnia, in The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe, Lucy and Edmund have gone in through the back of a wardrobe, yeah, okay, into another world. And then they come back and Lucy is gushing with excitement. "We went through the wardrobe and we used Mr. Tun must have fallen and Peter and they, what?" And then Eddie turns to Edmund, and Edmund says, "I don't know what she's talking about." And Lucy said, "But you've been there as well." And Edmund pretends he doesn't know what she's talking about. And they go and look at the back of the wardrobe, and it's a wardrobe, Lucy. And then they go to the professor, and they say, "Look, Lucy's telling us there's another world through a wardrobe." And Edmund's saying, "There isn't. What do you think, professor?" And he says, "Well, Well, let's not think about how crazy it sounds to begin with. Who's the more believable? Who normally tells the truth, the professor says? And they say, well, it's, the funny thing is, professor, it's normally Lucy. Well then, he says, there's probably a world through the back of the wardrobe. For Noah that day, it wasn't how crazy the future sounded, and it sounded bizarre and crazy that God might wipe everything off this earth. But it was the fact that it was the God who he walked with, that he knew and he trusted, had told him that this really was going to happen. Faith believes God as he warns. You know, as we move to the New Testament, God is the same warning God. Some people think of the New Testament as being a different God, that God's a God of love in the New Testament. We don't have judgment there. But you know, it's the same God of love and judgment in the New and the Old. You know, as Peter, okay, he's preaching to Cornelius in Acts chapter 10, okay, and these Cornelius doesn't know much about Jesus, okay, and he's telling him all about Jesus. He went around doing good. He's the God-man. He healed and he was crucified, all the things that we know about Jesus. And then Peter pauses and brings it to the climax. This is what it's all about, Peter says. He says in verse 42, you see, Peter says he's commanded us to preach to the people and to testify that he is the one appointed by God as judge of the living and the dead. Jesus, Cornelius, didn't just come here to heal and to do good. He didn't come down from heaven as a jolly. He didn't come to reform politics or change governments. He came to warn us that there really is an eternity ahead of us. He came, Cornelius, because there's really a heaven and there's really a hell. And he really is the judge of all the world, Cornelius. That's what Peter was saying. You see, Peter knew Jesus. You see, Jesus himself, you could think, Luke chapter 17, okay? And in Luke chapter 17, Jesus talks about Noah. He says in verse 26, he says, just as it was in the days of Noah. Jesus talks about Noah. So it will be in the days of the Son of Man. They were eating and drinking and marrying, being given in marriage, until the day when Noah entered the ark and the flood came and destroyed them all. He carries on, so it will be on the day of when the Son of Man is revealed. Gulp. Jesus is saying, using Noah as an illustration, that there really is a future judgment. And as I was preparing for today, you know, there's some really hard words that Jesus said that really are horrible things that it'd be much nicer not to talk about. Can I just read some really pretty awful words? If I can find them. Okay, in Mark chapter 9, Jesus says this. If your hand causes you to sin, cut it off. It's better for you to enter life crippled than with two hands go to hell, to the unquenchable fire. And if your foot causes you to sin, cut it off. It's better for you to enter life lame than with two feet be thrown into hell. And if your eye causes you to sin, tear it out. It's better for you to enter the kingdom of God with one eye than with two eyes be thrown into hell, where their worm does not die and the fire is not quenched. What awful words. Jesus isn't encouraging self-mutilation here, okay? Cutting off hands and plucking out eyes. He's saying, talking in hyperbole, he's saying, there really is a place called hell, and it's really so bad, do anything to avoid going there. If you could cut your hand off to avoid, do anything you can, Jesus says, to avoid going there. You see, Jesus came, and the first time, and he came because he loves us. And he came to take our sin, the sin that offends him and hurts him, that is so grotesque towards him. He came, the God-man, not just to warn, but to take that upon him himself. You see, when Jesus comes again, he knows that he's not coming as a baby to coo over. He's not going to come on a donkey when he comes again. He's coming as the majestic, glorious, powerful God to judge the living and the dead. There's a hymn that we're going to sing at the end that says, there, talking about the cross, there lies beneath its shadow, but on the farther side, the darkness of an awful grave that gapes both deep and wide. And there between us stands the cross, two arms outstretched to save, like a watchman set to guard the way from that eternal grave. God warns us today. He says, really, there is a heaven and there really is a hell to be shunned. And I really have come so that you might not have to go there, to rescue us from our sin. Faith believes God when he warns us. Okay, secondly, if we're going to go fast now, faith fears God. We read in Hebrews that in reverent fear, Noah constructed an ark. In the New King James, it says that he was moved by godly fear to build an ark. It's easy for us maybe to come to church or maybe to open our Bibles and we come with our heads. Maybe we come with our tablets and our books and we talk and debate about what the Bible says. And it can be very cerebral. But that day when God walked with Noah and told him that there really was going to be a coming judgment, Noah, we read, felt something. He was moved, not in his head, but in his heart. He was moved. His being was moved to act. Are we moved by God? As we consider the holiness and the majesty and the glory and the purity and the love of God is revealed in Scripture, are we moved? Or does it become so familiar to us that we debate and write theses? And a colleague of mine at work was telling me that in the last school holidays, she went with her husband and her 19-year-old daughter and her 14-year-old son, and they went to watch Toy Story 4. And she said at one point there was some funny noise in the cinema. And she kind of looked down the line, her aisle in the cinema, to see her husband and her daughter and her son weeping. They'd been moved by Toy Story 4. We've been there, haven't we? Maybe not in Toy Story 4, but we've been moved by maybe a romantic film or something. But what about God? Does it move you to think that the God who made this world should come and walk amongst us? That he should really go to the cross in our place because he loves you? You know, it moves me every time when I think about Peter. I love that story. I'm sure I've mentioned it before in chapter 5 of Luke. And Peter, he's been out fishing, okay, one night. And he's fished all night. Now, if I fished all night, I would be feeling exhausted. I'd be feeling pretty grumpy. He hadn't caught anything. He was grouchy. He was tired. And Jesus from the shore, Peter, whack the nets on the other side. He was feeling okay. And he throws the nets on the other side. And suddenly, I mean, it was crazy, okay? Suddenly, those nets that hadn't caught a single fish all night were full to bursting. The boat started sinking. He had to call the other boats around him to come and help. And he was now feeling crazy. He was laughing, I'm sure. It was ridiculous. It was ridiculous. The crazy miracle that had happened on his boat that night. And then he looked at Jesus. And you know, he moves to Jesus. He puts the fish to one side, however ridiculous that was. And suddenly he feels in his heart an overwhelming sense that he's got sin in his life. And compared to Jesus, he doesn't deserve to be near him. And he throws himself at Jesus' feet and he's moved. And he says, Lord, I don't deserve to be near you. I wonder if we've been moved by Jesus. Are we moved as we consider his character this morning? We should have a reverent fear for our God. When we come like this to church, it's not like meeting a mate in the pub. We come to worship God, the living God, who loves us and died for us. But you know, as I thought about this and looking through the rest of the New Testament, there's another type of fear in the New Testament. In Matthew, Jesus says, do not fear those who can kill the body but cannot kill the soul. As I was thinking about that, that sounds not kind of revere. That sounds like scare fear, doesn't it? Don't fear someone who's gonna stab you and kill you. That's not revere. That's scare fear, isn't it? Okay. Jesus, don't fear men like that. Rather fear, so the same fear, him who can destroy both soul and body in hell. Jesus says, there's a place for revering me, but just there's also a place for being terrified of what it would be like to be on the wrong end of the power of God, to have all of his holiness and purity and power against you would be a fearful thing, God says. That's what you should be afraid of. Some years ago, I'll never forget, okay, it was an awful time. We were in Bristol. That wasn't the awful bit, although it could be, couldn't it? Bristol Rovers. It was an awful day because I was busy packing the car, and across the road, my family were in a house across the road, and I was packing the car, and Jemima was very little at the time, and she came running down the path, okay? And I could see from across the road, it was a busy road, Jemima running down the path, and she had her eyes set on the car, okay, for me, ahead of her. And I looked on, and I could see her running onto a busy road. And I looked, and I could see this car coming very fast down the road. And I yelled with all of my parental authority and love. I shouted, Jemima, stop! I shouted, there's a car coming! And Jemima froze. She revered me. She trusted me. I was her dad. And she knew that I was shouting because she needed to listen to me. She was she trusted my voice. And she scared of the car. She was terrified of that car that was coming towards her. And she paused and the car screeched to a halt. And everything was all right. But you know, God this morning, okay, he says, you should trust me. You should be aware of me. I'm warning you, he says. I've come to warn you of what's ahead. There really is a judgment, okay? Trust me when I say that I can save you from it. Be afraid of the car. Be afraid of the judgment. Be in awe of me. Trust me. Thirdly, faith trusts, believes in God. Faith is moved by God. Faith looks different. Okay, we read that he condemned the world by his faith, by the building of this ark. In 2 Peter, we read that he was a preacher of righteousness. But I imagine it took Noah about 120 years to build this edifice. That's a pretty long time, isn't it? Okay. Noah looked really different to everyone around him. I mean, nobody else was building an ark. He looked weird. You can imagine what people were saying as they were walking past. The comics of the day would have been having, they'd have had a field day, wouldn't he? Boat builder, two planks short of a boat. Or they could have made all sorts of jokes about him, okay? And the scientists would have come and tried to reason with Noah. And Noah, listen, it's not raining. We're far from the sea. It's never happened before. It's not going to happen, Noah. And the philosophers would have reasoned with him. You could imagine the kind of conversations that would have happened. Noah's neighbor might come out and, Noah, what are you doing? I'm building an ark, friend. But why? Why are you doing this? Well, God has promised he is going to judge the world because of our sin. And this ark that I'm building, neighbor, is the means of rescue. I guess people laughed, ridiculed. Maybe they even sought to dismantle the boat that he was building. But Noah persisted day in, day out, year in, year out, spending everything he had on the building of this ark. He was living because something in the future was promised to him. And that was of greater reality and greater significance than what the world was living for at the time. And ultimately, whatever response people had, okay, whether they were laughing or pitiful, whether they dismissed him as a madman, at the end of the day, there was a deep-seated heart of unbelief in everyone else around him. And Noah condemned them by his actions of building this ark. You've heard the term... You put me to shame. Have you ever said that? Okay, somebody else has done something that you should have done, and you go to them, oh man, you've put me to shame. I should have done that, and you've done it. You put me to shame. Noah was putting the world to shame by living a life of faith. He's saying to the world, you should act like this, and I'm putting you to shame. You're condemned for your unbelief when you look at my life of belief. Our lives should look radically different from the world around us. The problem was back then, and the problem is still is today, as you go out of here, I don't know which route home you go with, you walk or drive, but we go past edifices that have been there for centuries. I mean, we go past Netley Abbey. That's been there since the 13th century. And you say, but everything feels so stable. And the world acts as if everything is so stable and is going to go on just as it always has done. But faith tells you that no matter how things appear, one day this world will come to an end. One day Jesus will return as the judge of the living and the dead. One day we will pass from life into eternity. And our lives now should be showing the world what it should look like to have faith in God. As we finish, okay, faith believes God. Faith fears God. Faith looks different to the world around us. And as we finish, okay, faith, this is where we can smile, okay, faith wins. Faith wins because Noah is contrasted the world around who are condemned. But by contrast, Noah, we read there in Hebrews 11, becomes an heir of righteousness by faith. You see, Noah, when they were laughing and ridiculing him, he looked up. And I think he looked beyond their laughter. He looked beyond the hardships and the trials of building that boat for 120 years. He looked beyond the damp days that he was going to spend on a floating zoo. He looked beyond all of that. He looked into eternity because God had promised him that one day he would be an heir of righteousness. God didn't promise him a fun life, a pathway to happiness. God promised him an heir of righteousness. That one day he would stand with his God, with Jesus, and God would look at him. And he wouldn't see his sin, but he would see Jesus' goodness. That at the cross, Jesus would swap places with him. That Jesus would take his wrong, his shame, his distorted mess. Jesus would take it as his own. And when God would look at Mr. Noah, he'd say, Noah, I see Jesus' righteousness in you. And by faith, friends, by faith, this is where we finish. We can become heirs of righteousness if we come to the foot of the cross.